we're calling it the Judging Nerd Culture Podcast.
Yep. Hello, everyone. Yes. Welcome to Judging Nerd Culture with me, your big, your brown, your Latin lover, Raul Alejandro González Enriquez, and my partner.
It's me. Here at the JNC. I'm long, I'm lanky, I'm loud, I'm luscious. It's Pookie, Coop, in other words. And we're both gonna do some podcasting.
Yep, welcome to episode one, where we don't know what we're doing, and we're gonna figure it out on the way.
That's okay. We're calling it back to an important subject to both of our lives, and we imagine yours if you found this podcast. We're talking about Pokemon. Calling it back to the good young days, in which nobody really knew what they were doing.
So, we're here to talk about Game Freak's ultimate production, Pokemon.
Pokemon, yes, developed by Game Freak, published, of course, by Nintendo. It's the thing that made the Game Boy any kind of a cultural significant thing.
It's why the PSP died on launch.
Hey, you know, there people defend the PSP.
I love the PSP. It doesn't exist.
PSP barely exists, that's true. And the Nintendo handhelds also really only exists due to Pokemon's sway. But we've said the name a whole lot. We've said who it's by, roughly. What the hell is going on? This is going to be, you know, an ear-splittingly basic review for those of you who know what we're talking about. But, I mean, we're getting back to basics, and I think people like that. So, let's get back to basics.
Quick overview of what Pokemon is. Mm-hmm. It's a turn-based monster-catching RPG developed by Game Freak and published by Nintendo. It started in 1996.
That's in the U.S., by the way. Yeah. This is definitely English-speaker-centric. We can't really help it. This is U.S.-based. 94 in Japan.
If you want a Spanish translation, I sure as hell ain't doing it. I don't know that much Spanish anymore.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it was developed for the Game Boy, which, is, like you mentioned, is one of the main reasons it's such a successful product and, like, the primary handheld device for gaming, other than phones now. And the premise was simple. The main goal was to catch them all and become the champion.
Yes, so this takes place in a world that is very much like our own, technologically. Probably a few minutes into the future. We're going to get into some of
the past? I don't know, man.
Well, you know, if you go back to the first generation of Pokemon games, they were imagining a future from the 1990s. So, you know, some stuff still looks pretty boxy and antiquated. But the technology isn't the focus. The focus is the fact that everyone in the world since the, you know, dawn of human existence has lived in cooperation and sometimes in strife with Pokemon, pocket monsters, which are just basically like animals, but so preposterously powerful and dangerous that civilization never really set in. There are not roads or paths or anything between towns that you can take without being accosted by tons of wild monsters, and everyone is super okay with it. It's not like this is a thing that's happened all of a sudden. This is just how the people live. And the only reason humans are even able to get along is because they've developed technology that lets them catch Pokemon and raise them and basically make them like pets, but more intelligent and more capable. So people catch Pokemon, train them, and use them to defend themselves from the wild Pokemon that lurk in the tall grass and caves and whatnot, which, again, are the only passage between. You don't drive from place to place. There's occasionally a train. There's occasionally a boat. Yeah. The player character is always. The age is unspecified in the games. A lot of people think 10 years old. That's the decision they made in the anime, which we're going to touch on briefly, but not a ton in this episode. We're mostly talking about the games. But you are a young kid, and everyone has infinite faith in your ability to survive out in the world because you can catch Pokemon and use them to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm. So, along with catching all the Pokemon you can and just exploring the world as a meek and somehow surviving and thriving even 10-year-old, you also have the goal of going through the gyms. These, I don't know how to really describe them, other than like heads of these towns, these centerfolds of these towns where you go in and you fight a guy with your Pokemon who's been there doing this for a long time but somehow has a shit team. And you kick all of their asses, there's 8 of them, with enough proof of strength, you're able to go into the championship, fight 4 more of those fuckos, and then beat the champion. And then that's the game. You've completed it.
Yeah, that's the main thrust. The actual objective, you know, the credits roll when you defeat the champion, the Pokemon League champion, and become the champion. I like that you mentioned that they're the centerfolds of the towns, as though, like, you know, the Pokemon battling is one thing, and then they have like a racy, you know, pinup career off on the side. Brock already has no shirt when you go to fight him.
Yes, and I mean, they really are like just a visual attraction, because there's supposedly a government involved. They're just, no one cares about it because everyone pays attention to gyms because it's the flashiest.
So they're called gyms. Over the years, you know, people's the significance associated with them makes them act like anything but gyms. But in the original intent, that's what they were. You know, the most famous people in the town are definitely the leaders of these gyms, which, I mean, it is as it describes. You take your Pokemon there to train. They're also the facilitators of this greater challenge, which just has various determined young kids traveling throughout the entire region, you know, going to the gyms, defeating the leaders, getting these 8 badges in their attempts to become champion. But yeah, the leader of these gyms, who each have an exaggerated persona based on the kinds of Pokemon they use. For instance, a rock-themed Pokemon team, or water, aquatic Pokemon, that sort of thing. And there's been so many games with 8 gym leaders in each game, sometimes more, depending on the situation. So we're not going to, you know, be elaborate with each of these personalities. But they're the boss fights in the structure, and they're some of the more memorable parts.
They're also
very
simply themed. Like, aside from just, I do water and I do rock, they're also typically named after these things. Lieutenant Surge, as you can probably guess, is an electric.
Lieutenant Surge, the electric guy, Brock the rock type trainer. And again, we're dealing with the English names. I'm sure in Japan it was just as simple, and in the other languages, Misty the water type, Erica, the grass type. There's something in there somewhere.
Probably. Something I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, we're not going to dive too deep into the lore.
But yeah, so we'll, I've mostly just brought up the simplicity and like quaintness of the themes, mm-hmm. and their naming, just because it's part of the charm. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a silly theming structure that's really entertaining.
That was just Nintendo games back in the day, and Pokemon's the only one that's like mostly stuck to it, which is just go get the 8 objects and then go beat the boss. Like, you know, your Mario's work like that. That's just a pretty simple thing holding it together. But I do want to talk about another element. This is always introduced before the gym challenges even are, and this is unique to the player character, or often to the, well, always, to the player character and one other kid given this quest who ends up playing as your rival, is that at the beginning of the game, you, the player character, are always privileged enough to live in the same town as a famous professor who studies Pokemon. And I think this is a pretty genius way to get a player who's never played a Pokemon game aware of what exactly the terms of the world are, because the professor explains, hey, we live with these creatures, but we're always trying to find out more about them. We share the world with them. More likely, they allow us to live in the world with them. Because, again, these hold much more sway than animals do in the real world, where people shoot them with guns and that's that. Yeah. But the professor tasks you with, he gives you the Pokedex. You're going to find the word poke, or the prefix poka, appended to a lot of things as we get through here. He gives you the Pokedex, which is just an electronic encyclopedia, they say, and asks you to catch one of every Pokemon and gather data about it to further his studies, because he's getting up there. You're a spry young kid.
Which, at first, in the first game, that's not too much of a task.
You wanted you want 151, yeah.
But after, I don't know, 20-ish something years, it's become a bit of a bother.
Yeah, we're at upwards of 800 distinct types of Pokemon now. Mm-hmm. This task, which, you know, you're not prevented from seeing credits. You do not have to achieve this. This is definitely, like, a greater scope optional goal that the diehards will go for when, you know, the main player can easily beat the combat-focused part of the game by just getting a team of six guys. That's the max you can carry with you at any given time, your team of six, and training them up to be tough enough to deal with the threats in their way. It definitely appeals to a collecting type of player. Mm-hmm. And this is made more complicated. Why don't you tell us about the versions?
Okay, so most games come out in a couple of different versions initially. For the first ones, it was Red and Blue, and eventually they come out with a third version, Yellow. They're essentially the exact same game, with just some Pokemon you can catch and some you can't.
That, exactly. Exact same game with very minor tweaks, and that's what encompasses a generation. So mm-hmm. you talk about Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow, Pokemon Gold, Silver, and Crystal, and again, it's often with the two released at first, and another bonus one that's like, hey, we've got slightly more features. Yep. Don't you want to go buy this whole game again?
Oh, yeah.
Which, it would be cynical, and it is, but I mean, you know, we love these so much that it ends up being a fun element of player expression. Like, you know, some people are always diehard. Oh, I'm going to get Sun. I'm going to get Moon. It you know, creating this, you know, almost an Edward Jacobian situation, to turn a phrase, can generate interest in the property.
And part of that interest comes from, not so much in the first couple games, but later on in the cover Pokemon, the quote-unquote legendary of that game, a unique Pokemon for each game that is bigger and badder than all the rest.
Yeah, that's the big hook. And another element of the series that in the first games wasn't too on the radar, but as the games have gone on, the basic plot of go get the badges, go beat the champion, is complicated by the presence of one or more big deal Pokemon that by themselves are significant enough to threaten the world in some way. And you, a lucky child, are called of some age, eventually, you know, through your deeds, you gather enough renown to be called upon by, you know, sometimes the gym leaders, the league champion, etc., all of these really powerful battlers to, hey, step in and help us. You get the opportunity to catch this big legendary Pokemon, have it fight for you. You know, the plots have gotten, like, grander and more cosmic as things have accelerated to a mixed response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can't mention the legendaries and their plot relevance without bringing up the evil corporation teams.
Yeah, there's always a team, because they didn't want to say gang in this game advertised toward kids. They didn't want to say terrorist sect, so they call them the teams.
Yes. The most popular one, and my personal favorite, Team Rocket, which is just a gang of corporate corrupt asshats who try to steal Pokemon and game the world.
Yeah, it's pretty decent. Like, the very first games had Team Rocket, who stole Pokemon, used Pokemon to do crimes, basically just a papered over version of the Yakuza, except, you know, what if instead of shooting people and beating them with chairs, then would hold up the building that manufactures the Pokeballs. That's what you use to catch Pokemon, and just variously do dickish things. Over the generations, the evil team's plots have become more broader and cosmic, and, oh, these guys want to flood the world, and these guys want to rewrite time using the powers of these Pokemon. Mm-hmm, and, it, you know, the stakes keep on getting raised, and sometimes it kind of takes me out of it, but
point is, no matter what the problem is, on your route to becoming the champion, for some reason or another, some asshats decide to fuck something up, and you, this potentially a 10-year-old,
mm-hmm.
stops their evil plots and ruins everyone's day.
And, you know, if you're a kid playing these games, the empowerment fantasy is there. Like, it's pretty fun to be both just a fun kid, basically attempting to become an Olympic athlete would kind of be the equivalent in real life of doing the gym challenge, also ends up able to be kind of a superhero and stop crimes and, you know, you're the only one who ever learns how to have a Pokemon team with any variety and any strategy.
Yep. So, like we mentioned, this is one of the reasons that the Nintendo Game Boy became so popular. It's actually one of the most popular games ever. The second best-selling, right after Mario.
Second top-grossing game franchise. I don't know if that's counting the main series or the are all the spin-offs as well. But the Pokemon franchise, second highest grossing video game franchise of all time, definitely allowed the handhelds to take off. And part of that's to do with the social aspect. Kids can bring their Game Boys to school when they're not supposed to and bust every out day. Their link cable to plug their Game Boys into one another so they can trade Pokemon and battle Pokemon with one another. And it was the social stuff that really kind of put it on people's radars, because otherwise in play, it's really not a lot different from the turn-based RPGs that were around back in the day, your Final Fantasies and stuff, other than this theming that leaves it open to, just a whole lot of playground talk. You can argue about which Pokemon is best, everyone's got their favorites. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this and you know anything about Pokemon, which, like, you must, then you probably have a favorite.
So, just since this is our first episode, we're gonna introduce you a little bit to what we're doing.
Yeah.
That was a brief overview of what we're talking about today. It's Pokemon. Next, we're gonna take our little bit of time and each one of us do a quick review of the game itself. Our personal, like, yes or no, buy it or don't kind of thing. And then, we're gonna get into the real meat of the situation, and we're gonna judge it. And not in the on a scale of 1 to 10 thing, that's more of the review section. The judging, we're going to talk about whether it's actually any good, even if we like it or not.
Yeah, and we're going to go element by element. Like, this judgment may be made. I think we can both say, yeah, we like Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
Play it if you haven't somehow. But we're going to go into each of the pieces, the major characteristics, and express, you know, whether we like them, whether we hope that the series keeps them, whether other things could gain from trying to emulate this stuff.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'll start off. I'm going to review my experience with the game, and I'm going to say that I thoroughly enjoyed the game. Strong pass from this guy, an 8 out of 10. A score that I'd be upset with on a test, but passes real high standards on this game. So I've thoroughly enjoyed this game due to the fact that it has this sort of instant gratification of, like, bigger numbers every couple seconds as you level up your Pokemon, grinding through other Pokemon, taking them down, and just making a bigger, badder, stronger team. And I also just enjoyed the battling in general. It's not too complicated. It's just typically a 1v1, maybe some team battles. Turn-based, 4 moves per Pokemon, nothing too fancy, but there's enough meat in there between the typing bonuses that you get, some Pokemon being Fire-type versus Water-type, and obviously Water winning in that instance. There's just enough granularity that it's enjoyable to play, despite the fact that I clearly know how to win. The other parts of it, the parts that really keep bringing me, you know, into the game, is the gym system. I like going into a gym and exerting my will, just like, I won. Give me that shiny badge so I can leave and just feel better than you.
If you could go into a gym in real life and win, I don't really know what that means, but if there was, I mean, you know, I'm sure this exists in some capacity, but, like, you know, if you could see your own numbers go up as you work out, everyone would be fit as in trim. Like, the quantifying makes it addictive. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, hey, guess what? You have maxed out your legs. Here's a badge. Would be incredible. Hey, everyone. This is Cooper cutting in to amend a really obvious thing that I've realized just happened. Quantifying physical gains at the gym is already a thing. You can get a Fitbit or, like, a scale. all of that already exists. I just didn't want you guys to think we're incredible morons for not realizing that. We just get carried away when we're talking about Pokemon. That's it. Carry on.
Exactly. And it's so immediate. It's, wow, I was level 5 a minute ago, I'm level 10 now. That's a little exaggerated, but you see it happen so quickly right in front of you. And it doesn't just happen with the numbers of your Pokemon. It's not just they get stronger, you get better. It's also your money, which I love. Just the idea of it gives me this warm feeling of like, I could go outside, punch a motherfucker in the face, and just be like, well, I won that fight, give me money. And that's the system they live by.
Yeah, I mean, your Pokemon punched that motherfucker's Pokemon in the face. Yeah, no, that's something that, like, I think goes unobserved is every time you win a battle against another trainer, it's implied that you bet on it.
Yeah.
And when you lose a fight, you know, you don't just get game over, but you do lose half your money and you get booted back to the most recent town you were at. Very interesting economics in this world where, you know, apparently, you know, we trust kids to subsist by, hey, you know, go win some fights.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, along with that, I mean, I just enjoy it. It's fun to walk around. Some of the, especially the newer regions, are real pretty to look at. It's fun to explore in the cave. Well, not the caves. The caves always suck. But it's fun to explore in general and find the legendaries and collect, you know, the most powerful team you can or the most thematically awesome team you can. It's just real clean, wholesome fun. Doesn't mean it's not perfect in any way. The story is always pretty much the same in general. And, you know, it's kind of weird that you're just a random-ass kid just kicking some ass for no reason. It's the game is fun. The story is all right. The motivation behind the story is lackluster. So that's why I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. That means. Yeah, whatever that means. I'm going to echo a lot of that. Again, so much of this, like, pretty much everyone has some relation to Pokemon in their childhood, if they're roughly our age group. You know, I mean, it's hard not to get hooked on how charming the theming is and, you know, end up with your favorite Pokemon and all of that. And, you know, getting absorbed into the actual role playing of like, cool, this is my team. These are my 6 friends and we're going on an adventure. You know, the actual gameplay definitely is oriented towards children. You know, there is the element of wanting to have your team be diverse enough to deal with all of the threats. If all of your teammates get demolished by grass-type Pokemon, for instance, you know, you might end up having difficulties and needing to switch it up. And that's definitely a layer more complicated, like worrying about these types, 17 different Pokemon types, and Pokemon can be 2 types or 1, and the elaborate rock-paper-scissors kind of considerations that evolve from that. Is a step beyond what turn-based RPGs back in the day kind of had going on. But it's not overly complicated once you learn the systems. Definitely as a kid, I got stumped by some of that stuff, but there isn't really much in the way of challenge. And as you're going through the games as an adult, I find that, you know, pretty much everyone I talk to about them still likes Pokemon from a place in their heart, gets less enthusiastic about the actual playing of the games once you realize you can, within any degree of kind of like adult strategy, can pretty much steamroll right through them. Or if you really need to, nothing stops you from just walking around in the grass for a little while, grinding up levels, and then steamrolling the next portion of the game.
Yeah, that's another thing, just in that aspect of difficulty of play. I currently always, you know, make a well enough balanced team, but my first playthrough of Pokemon Fire Red, one of the remakes, I definitely had a Charizard who was just far higher level than everyone else, and I used him to go through the Water Elite Four member. Why? Because he was strong enough to do it. Mm. Like, you can have strategy or power. Either one works.
That's pretty, you know, the innate cheat code in any Pokemon game is just, with enough little kid patience, you don't even have to pay attention to any of the, you know, more complicated rules. And really, in any game with leveling up and having the power of your avatar matter more than your own strategy, you know, there are various other more complicated RPGs, you can't get away with stuff like that. But at the same time, it doesn't really have the lasting kid appeal. If you want to just lean on your one favorite, get up to level 100 and just smash through everything, you totally can. And the ridiculous wide variety of player expression is what makes it great. There's all kinds of leeway for... I mean, if you go on Twitch or YouTube or whatever, people will do all kinds of ridiculous themed Let's Plays. Like, I got 6 Wigglytuffs. Let's go beat the Elite Four.
And Wigglytuff ain't nothing to fuck with.
No. But, again, the actual... By allowing so much diversity, the actual challenge factor kind of fades out. Yeah, so that's where I fall on it. It's impossible to separate how much affection I have for the actual world and all of the creatures. Well, most of the creatures. Out of the 800, there's definitely bound to be some duds, but, with any series of things, that'll happen. Mm-hmm.
So I gave it an 8 out of 10. On a scale of 1 to, I don't know, red, what would you grade this?
I'm gonna give it a hearty endorsement out of success.
Perfect. So, now with the reviews over, that was, just our 2 cents in our own time playing the game. Let's talk about more of the aspects of the game. Let's get into the real judgment portion. But first, let's just remind everybody that this is our first cast, and we would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter and whatever other services we've been developing, because we have just started, and we will first, make a Patreon and all that stuff. And if you feel like supporting us, please find it. We'll give more info about that soon. You can find us on Twitter at Delta Cryptid Productions.
That's right. That's where the real fun shit we work on is going to do. And this is very transparently a flagship to advertise the bulk of what the two of us beautiful boys are working on.
Yes, we're developing a new and unique tabletop game. I'm not really sure if any of that's true. But the idea is it's fantasy, high fantasy, if it just continued to exist into the present. So it's high fantasy, except orcs go to work in an office and do accounting.
Yes. Now I know what you might be thinking if you know tabletop games. Hey, that's Shadowrun. No, it's not, damn it.
Yes. Ours is playable.
we've got some hot takes, but this is the premise is, what if your standard fantasy swords and sorcery environment, where back at the very beginning, orcs, dwarves, elves, magic, etc., had all coexisted on the actual geography of real life, and extrapolating out a new present time from that different starting scenario. So magic isn't fresh and new, it has always been. That and on the mechanical side of things, we want to allow people to build their own spells, no more of this D&D, well, I'm a wizard and I know 5 spells, and each one is the exact same every time. We're trying to get a spell creation engine together for a world in which everyone has magical potential that is not so elaborate it makes your ears bleed.
So yeah. That's us. That's what we're working on. We're going to let you guys know more about it on Delta Cryptid Productions on Twitter. And you can also follow me personally on Twitter at Lycus Stratus. It's a dumb name. Don't worry about it. You can call me Ollie. So
we're hoping that wasn't too incredibly detailed, but at the very least that this was more interesting than your typical ad portion.
So back to the judging. Let's start off with the game itself. Let's go with, since we've talked about it plenty already within our reviews, the actual fighting, the actual core mechanic of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
On a scale of real bad to fucking great, what would you say this? What is your opinion of this?
I'm gonna give it a, I'm gonna give it a politely enjoyable. You know, like, the fights in the game don't knock my socks off. There's a lot of potential for, you know, elaborate, intricate, strategic fighting, most of which only really comes into play in the multiplayer battling aspect, which is probably way more of a thing in Japan, where everyone is, you know, just much closer together. Because, you know, man, a lot of the people I know have Pokemon, but it gets into the any multiplayer game territory where, like, if one person really knows all the elaborate secrets, they're just going to smash the other one every time, and it's not a huge thing. At least in our own particular social sphere, there's definitely Pokemon battling tournaments and all that good stuff. But, yeah, you know, the games will pass the time, and I definitely wouldn't put them on any, you know, of my personal top fives gameplay-wise. But, you know, they're not super sucky. It's not a chore to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. Not a chore. The shining, the shining appraisal.
Yes. I'm definitely gonna echo most of that, to be honest. I'm gonna, on our scale of super great to super shit, it was eh. Like, I do really like the fact that I can set up an entire team of rock Pokemon and just have the one rock Pokemon who's also water so that I can, you know, adjust my shit, or have the one rock Pokemon who's also steel or fire or whatever,
mm-hmm.
so that I have just enough nuance to take on any team I need to while still just having a team of ugly rock guys.
Yeah.
Like, that, there's, so like, I, like we were saying, there's some nuance to it.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough that makes it, you know, difficult,
mm-hmm.
but enough that you can add your own fun.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the style, which isn't necessarily something that comes up on game ratings all the time, it should. The style, I think, for me is, you know, a perfect 11 out of 11. Like, the ability to express yourself how you like and pick the creatures that you want, and, you know, the thrill of, like, hey, cool, like, I finally found the route that I can go to catch my favorite Pokemon, or, you know, hey, what the hell is this thing? I gotta see what this dude's all about. You know, if you're going into a game blind without looking everything up in advance like I do.
I mean, who doesn't?
Okay, so, we've kind of talked the battling to death. There's also a huge collection component. The game, you know, is really insistent, like, hey, catch them all. That is at least one of your character's stated goals in each of the main series Pokemon games. What do you think?
All right. So, with the catching of them comes these Pokedex entries. Every time you find yourself a new Pokemon and put it in that weirdly dimension-breaking Pokeball, you get an entry that describes pretty much everything about this creature. And while in conceptual, like, ideas, I think that's cool, just like, oh, I got a thing. What is everything about it that I need to know? Here it is. Awesome. The entries that we get in the current Pokedexes are dumb as fuck. So,
the Pokemon, the lore of the individual species of Pokemon does not hold up to a whole lot of scrutiny.
Yes. So I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna give the Pokedex a cool rating. It's cool. I'm gonna give the things they say in it a dumbass rating. It's dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go ahead and call this better in theory, because I love that there's that option that, you know, they can hide some genuinely really interesting bits of lore in here. But, for instance, there's a Pokemon called Magcargo. This is probably one of the more famous dumbass Pokedex entries. When you catch a Magcargo, or catch its infant form, the Slugma, and evolve it into a Magcargo, Slugma basically is a slug made out of lava with an adorable dopey drippy face, and Magcargo is just slightly bigger and has gained a hard rock snail shell. It's a lava snail. The listed temperature that a Magcargo exudes in the Pokedex, I forget the exact figure, but it is like twice as hot as the sun.
Like, which is not lava temperature.
Not lava temperature. Taken as an actual fact, assuming the rest of the physics operate the way they do in the real world, the presence of one Makargo on the Earth would incinerate, like, the entire globe. Like, it would be a disaster. The atmosphere would catch on fire.
With how many there are? Yeah.
Yeah. It's too hot. If you send one out to fight, you'll win, but also you'll lose, because you will burn away. Now, I mean, you know, in reality, what I would say is, oh, somebody just wrote that number down without thinking about it. In canon, I have to just assume that it means that Fahrenheit in the Pokemon world works differently than Fahrenheit in real life does.
Yep.
Because you never open up a real encyclopedia to read about the sun in a Pokemon game, so who knows how hot that sucker is.
You know, that's the negative side of the Pokedex, the kind of dumb entries, that's the word.
Mm-hmm.
As dumb entries, that's the negative part of it. But the positive part is the weird statistics about it. Like, some Pokemon are, like, I don't know, 3 foot high, even though they're shaped like people.
Yeah. The Lucario, the furry bait, kind of brawling dog-looking Pokemon.
He's beautiful and fun to play.
Kind of got a lot of press. Like, they definitely wanted you to be like, this is a cool Pokemon. Like, you really want to catch this guy. And it works. Like, you know, people are big fans. Lucario shows up in Smash Bros. And is roughly the same height as the human participants in that. But, you know, in the actual Pokedex entries, it's just 3 feet tall. It's just, what if a little dog stood up on its hind legs, and that's Lucario, and I find that so adorable. There are some other Pokemon that are preposterously massive.
Yeah, what's Whaildong?
Whaildong?
He's a fucking dick.
Whaillord. It's supposed to be shaped like a parade blimp. It's a whale-shaped Pokemon, but it's definitely like an inflatable whale. Just a very big oval with some fins poking out of it near the back.
If you want to visualize it better, it's a penis with a face.
Oh, no, it's not. Whaillord is perfectly smooth. perfectly smooth and 47 feet long. So
yeah,
theoretically...
Like,
oh, boy. Theoretically, you can catch one of these things and send it into battle in the middle of an office building, let's say, and it doesn't, you know, just smash you against the walls and destroy you. The collection aspect, I quite enjoy, but I've never done the catch-em-all. I won't go out of my way to do it, but in, you know, going through a new area, in a new biome, like, just the incentive to, hey, here's a new creature I haven't seen before. I should get one. That's a lot of fun. It changes the dynamic of the battle from just time to beat up this wild creature to, oh, I've got to plan it and strategize in a certain way to be able to catch this thing. That's a lot of fun. And it compels you to spend time exploring in the genuinely pretty interesting places, even from the very beginning. You know, the beginning of the games, typically there's a lot of just grassy, pleasant paths from town to town. Eventually you start getting into caves, which can be problematic when you just keep on running into the Zubat over and over and over and over and over and over and over again.
That's just because there's no fucking sidewalks. At least in the grassy regions, there's a fucking sidewalk.
Yeah, in a cave, you're always in danger of a random encounter. But forests are going to have different Pokemon than caves. Riding one of your Pokemon to surf along the ocean side is going to run you into different encounters than being in a haunted laboratory, which is a real thing from game one.
Is that the one where you got Zapdos?
No.
That's the power
plant. No, the abandoned power plant is where you catch the giant lightning bird.
I just realized this game is really just about this, like, fucking 10-year-old going to a bunch of abandoned places he's not supposed to.
And abandoned places are so cool. Like, abandoned places with creatures that are kind of friendly, kind of not.
I don't know about friendly. They usually attack the fuck out
of you. Oh, yeah, they definitely... They attack
and they still take your money.
They attack... You do lose money when you get knocked out by a wild Pokemon, and that's pretty strange.
They mug you. Wild Pokemon mug you.
Does that happen for sure?
I'm 95% sure.
Maybe what they mean is that is the, like, emergency bill. Like, you know, you call in, you get ambulanced, and by that I mean someone flies in on their giant spiky bird and picks you up, brings you back to the Pokemon Center, and, you know, then you gotta pay up, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, the collection aspect, I sometimes entertain the thought of catching them all for real, but will never get into that. Not really. The time on that is so much. And in anything that has random encounters, there arises a bummer at a certain point when it's just like, oh, I just want to get this particular Pokemon. Please let me just run into this one. But if some, you know, anything that has a 5% chance of showing up, like, that's kind of no good as far as I'm concerned. There, you know, any, like, I like the idea of rare and special and secret Pokemon existing, but I just kind of wish there were another way to get around to that sort of thing that still involved, you know, exploration and discovery, but not as much just walking back and forth in the grass, rolling the dice, hoping that a specific creature comes up. And especially if there's one that I want to add to my team for real, the rarity in any of these kinds of games, you know, just the low chance of random drops is never something I'm super enthusiastic about. So, I mean, I'm still going to get, like, the theming of the Pokedex, I am still going to give a cool lot of fun to Echo Lolly. But the acting upon it, the actual game feel, I'm going to give a occasional bummer out of decent.
Yeah. Especially with all that RNGesus that you need to be praying to.
Exactly. I really do. We have to legally talk about the music in order to include snippets of it in this podcast. Don't know if you knew that, but I'm happy to do it. The music from Pokemon games, like, other than occasional motifs and occasional bits that recur throughout all of the games, there isn't really an equivalent to, like, a Super Mario Bros. 1-1, like, instantly recognizable theme that everyone knows. That said, the music, it does have a really strong identity. The tunes are kind of laid low, I think, by the fact that the games are on the Game Boy. Like, I am a music collector. Like, I love video game music. I go out of my way to pick it up. Not everybody plays games like that, and you know, more power to them. So I typically go out of my way to listen through the soundtrack of my Pokemon games. A lot of people are never going to get to that experience simply because you play it on a portable system. If you're on the go, if you're on the subway or something, you're not going to blast your Pokemon at full volume, and you're probably not even going to plug your headphones in nowadays when you've got podcasts to listen to instead.
Yeah. I've definitely gone through maybe 3 whole generations without ever listening to the music.
Exactly. And the format makes it so easy, whereas if you're playing something on a home console, you're probably going to have that cranked because you're at the TV. Like, that's where the juice is. That said, the composer, whose name I'm going to check, Junichi Masuda, who works on various other things in the Pokemon games, but definitely has a strong style. Like, there's nothing generic in these games, and it's all very much, when you listen to Pokemon music, it gets you pumped. There are various battle themes. There's a different little musical sting whenever you run into different kinds of trainers, like a bug catcher and a hiker and a Team Rocket thug and a gym leader are going to have a different kind of introduction motif when you run into them. And collecting all of those kind of is pretty cool in its own right. It definitely gives various things an interesting identity. And you'll have heard various little snippets from throughout the generations. Probably, if I can sense how I'm going to edit this in the future, going in order chronological in the podcast from oldest to newest. And I will, in the regular recording session and not in post after I've decided what the songs are going to be, will briefly name those songs and the games they came from right now. Hello everyone, it's Cooper from the future. I've realized I can definitely just put the names of the songs in the episode description and save us all a boatload of time. If you are or are not interested in looking them up, it'll be easier for you that way. And if not, we won't take up any more of your time with the episode. So carry on and happy listening. Okay, now that I've done that.
You definitely enjoy the music and the ambiance it brings, yeah?
I'm gonna give the music jam out of exciting to listen to.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, the honest truth is I don't listen to it very often. I could not really pinpoint the difference between a Gen 1 battle music versus a Gen 17, whatever we're on right now. Like, they kind of sound samey to me.
You probably could with Gen 1.
Okay.
Original Game Boy sound chip is very different from what we're working with, but, couldn't tell the most recent three generations of Heart, probably.
Yes. But, despite the fact that I can't differentiate game musics, like, individual games, within the game itself, it's still pretty good. Like, the few times that I do listen to it, it's definitely sticks the landing for what you're supposed to be feeling. When you enter a new town, it's just like, the music changes drastically from, I'm in a zone where I could get into a fight, to, I'm in a safe haven now. And you really feel that in the music. It's very, I don't know, it allows you to feel emotion for these little sprites when there really is kind of a disconnect there sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it also pumps you up. Like, the battle music, again, not always my jam, but when I do listen to it, it's like, yeah, I'm fighting a guy who can kick my butt, maybe. And you feel it. It's pretty good. It's quality made, even if I don't really stick my hat on it.
Mm-hmm.
Hang my hat. That is the proper expression.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. So I'm going to rate it pretty good out of not bad.
Excellent. I like that you mentioned the towns. I definitely am somewhere going to work in here the, like, irresponsibly almost creepy theme from Lavender Town in Generation 1, which is, like, the spooky haunted town and in which you adventure in the Pokemon Tower, which is where Pokemon who have died are laid to rest. There's gravestones everywhere in the tower, which has multiple floors full of gravestones, which suggests to me that whoever did the art direction might not have understood what a gravestone actually meant.
I mean, they gotta have been cremated. It's gotta be. The gravestone.
Maybe they're ash stones, and I don't know a god doggone thing. But I mean, you are adventuring through like mazes of gravestones in this town, and the music there, in it, especially in the older games, where the amount of texts they could spend to give a place like written personality was very limited on the Game Boy, really captures the mood of being in this spooky town. Definitely fun mood setting. Talk about the story.
Yes. I'm going to give the general... Okay, I got to do another one of these concept versus application sort of things.
Yeah.
Because the concept, you're a kid, you go on an adventure, you catch a bunch of monsters and beat up other monsters and become basically a god among men in your little community, is awesome. Especially for when you start playing this game, you're like single-digit ages.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you feel good playing it. You feel way cooler than you do in real life. And that's awesome. That's a fun plot. I always enjoyed the plot with the bad guys, even when they're fucking stupid. Like, even in Diamond Pearl, I liked the fact that I could thwart these adult ass, like, I don't know, bad guys that just like show up as a 10-year-old and be like, sniff my shorts, motherfucker. And just win. And, you know, save the world even though no one knows about it. It's a fun little adventure in this silly game. So like, in the conceptual nature of it, I like the plot. In the practice, now that we have, how many games do we have actually?
Oh gosh, not counting different versions. We're on Gen 7 right now.
Yes, we have 7 different games with pretty much the exact same plot. Like, it's always, you start off in a town, you go to your professor, they send you off to the world, even though that seems like a dumb idea, and you start fighting gyms. Along the way, you find this weird plot of bad guys doing bad things, you beat them up, and then you go back to beating up gym leaders, eventually becoming the champion. It's always the exact same.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Exactly. So, like, it's fun in its first time around. It's really cool. My first time playing through, I was like, yeah, this is awesome. My second time through, I was like, I mean, it's still fun, but, like, I've been through this before. So, conceptually, 10 out of 10 fucking spectacular idea, because it's, you know, a core concept of fun. In practice, stop doing it. Do something new. That's what I got.
Yeah, I can roll with that. It definitely is very formulaic. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but in this instance, I kind of think it is. That's like one of the main things. Like, it probably contributes the most to people falling off over the years, which they always characterize as, oh, this new generation had a Pokemon I don't like, so that's the end of the line. Pokemon stopped being good after X generation. I'm like, man, Pokemon never stopped being pretty good. You just got older. And that's fine. Like, but, you know, it's up to the individual to decide their cutting off point. And I feel like if there was any even remote expectation that something could be different from game to game, people would get pretty into it. And there are minor differences in how the plot is executed in some of the more recent games. But, you know, again, for the most part, it's just you set off on a pretty humble goal, again, to have your team basically become Olympic gold medalists in the progression of essentially the sport in the universe of battling Pokemon, and on the way encountering some grand scale threat and beating it up. I think it does kind of diminish the quality of the credibility and threateningness of the actual bad guys that inevitably, because the games are pretty easy, you just squish them no problem. Like, you know, if there were in the gameplay side, some modifications to the difficulty, and in the narrative, some, you know, I don't know, perhaps just greater reason to take issue with these guys. And this is one of the ways in which I think the older games kind of did it best. Like, in the very first generation of Pokemon games, there was no real world-threatening plot involving titanic, gigantic Pokemon that could mess everything up. It was just you walked into some towns in which the bad guys had already won, and the criminal organization basically ran the center metropolis of the region, and because you had to deal with some almost unrelated errands and needed to go into these places anyway, you ended up fighting this criminal syndicate. And again, it's kind of silly that the badass leader in the suit named Giovanni.
Fucking love Giovanni.
Love Giovanni. He's aesthetically so cool. It is still pretty silly that you just thrash him every time you run into him. I mean, unless you're a little kid, he might still kick your ass. But
I mean, he's got a nice lineup. But he's still mostly rock type, so just throw
Giovanni ground type, you just gotta wash him away with your water and grass, and you know, you can still pretty much wipe him out. That is kind of inherent to any story that focuses on kids, and because it's a video game in which your literal hands affect how well you do, it's hard to build stakes. Mm-hmm. And my overall take on the plots of these games, is, you know, kind of a good try out of not so bad.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And I don't want to add too much cast time on this, but you mentioned a good point. Like, there's no, with this, it's you're a kid, you go off and you do this, your little story, and then the story ends. And there are very few, there's a couple of games that are direct sequels, but even then, you still start over. There's no next time you play your same character who's getting a little more development. There's none of that. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, I don't know, I guess that's the point.
You are explicitly a silent protagonist. I mean, if you play the games, you know, but you probably could have mentioned this up till then. And, you know, that makes a ton of sense. You want a young kid player to be able to project any interest they have onto this player character. So there's definitely no built-in sass or personality. Just, you know, do you want to be a boy or a girl? Have one of these appearances, and that's all you really get. The expression comes from the Pokemon you choose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now that we've covered pretty much the game in itself, let's talk about how you feel about the game. What brings the game to life, or what really kind of bums it out? And I feel like the best part to start there is the squad. What's your fucking squad?
Oh, what's my squad, man? Like,
at least what's your theme? What's your Elite Four leader team up, double typing, or whatever you want to call it.
Okay. This is where the non-visual medium of the podcast might do us a little bit of injustice. If you're a fan, you probably know what these creatures are. We're going to do our best to describe them without taking up a ton of time. I adore the poison types. Mm-hmm. I think in putting myself into this world where these creatures live around you and are basically your pets, except they're giant and super powerful. I think having a team full of poisonous Pokemon is just like a real fuck you to anyone you happen to walk by or exist near in the world. Like, that's an intimidation move to be like, yeah, this is my Weezing. It's a Pokemon that's just a cloud of toxic gas with two faces and a skull and crossbones design that just is constantly emitting foul smoke. And even though it's supposed to be made of gas, it's incredibly sturdy somehow. I just hang out with this every day. Like, you know, this is my buddy. Welcome to my Elite Four battle chamber that is like, makes your eyes water and has you cough your guts out if you're, you know, like, wear a gas mask when you come to hang out with me. Here's my Weezing. And yeah, I really love poison types. There's Drapion, which is just this immense, super ugly scorpion that nevertheless I kind of vibe with. There's the Nidoking and Nidoqueen,
whatever
the fuck they are. Like, they're not necessarily reptilian, but they're not exactly mammals either. Mm-hmm. Even though these were the first Pokemon ever to have explicit, like, sex and gender in the very first games before Pokemon breeding was ever a thing that people were conscious of. But they're just spiky, tough armor looking,
which
poisonous tyrants. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of odd in Pokemon in general, because while not everything is an animal, there's, strictly speaking, like a noticeable theme to the Pokemon. It's that one is this animal, that one's that animal, that one's mm-hmm. a sword and a shield, or an ice cream.
This one's some metal balls with magnets.
Yeah, it's whatever. Like, you can tell what it is, even if what it is doesn't really exist. Mm-hmm. With Nidoking and Nidoqueen.
Nidoking and Nidoqueen are just kind of animal amalgams, yeah. And they look real cool.
They're beasts, mm-hmm. and that's all you get.
They're beasts, and that's all you get. And it's not poison type, but I really love Shuckle. And this definitely has a gameplay component. It just looks like a real shitty turtle. Like, it's got a red shell with various little spouts and just thin, noodly arms and legs and a thin, noodly face, and it looks absolutely pathetic. But Shuckle somehow has the highest defense of anything in the entire game. Like, any hit does just tiny little chip damage to a Shuckle, unless you hit it in one of its weaknesses, of which it has very few. So having one of those on my team, and you can still teach those to spit poison, and whether in-game, like, just playing through the story, this takes way too long. I've messed with competitive battling, multiplayer battling a little bit, and you can have a Shuckle just lay poison and traps and other things on your opponent's Pokemon, and without ever attacking them directly, just wear them down with acidic, dissolving, you know, stomach juice, while the Shuckle itself is so hard to penetrate. And it's just this, like, tiny little turtle that somehow is the densest creature in the world. That's pretty fun to me. I would definitely want one of those on my crew. I don't know if I'm at a full six, but I mean, these are just some guys I vibe with.
General gist.
And I really love Ditto, the pile of pink goo whose only ability is to copy whatever your opponent's Pokemon is. Yeah. It just transforms into an identical shape. Very, very interesting. So basically just a lot of slimes, oozes, sludges, and gases, and squishy, ugly bugs.
Basically anything time. You wouldn't want to look at, touch, or really interact with.
Everything that is really horrifying to me in real life, I somehow super vibe with when it's got a cute Pokemon face on it.
Cool. So just to get the judgment section out, how would you judge the ability to put together your fucking master team?
Great. Again, like, you know, In the game, executing on it isn't always a blast, because some Pokemon are just super rare, some you have to only get to incredibly late in the game when you'd want to have, you know, rolled with them the entire time. But in general, like, there's nothing quite like it. And in most other, there are various other monster-catching games, but most of those do involve, like, keeping something in your group for a little bit before phasing it out for something more powerful. And Pokemon, you're really invested in growing and building your team and having your, you know, six or more, roughly, you can switch them out, but your six at a time best buddies. Big ups from me. I'm gonna give it the Pookie likes this out of no, trust me, it's fun.
Nice. Yeah, I think I'm gonna start with my judgment of it first, you know, just get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you finally build that perfect team, whether it's statistically perfect or just aesthetically perfect, mm-hmm. feels fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels right. And now, speaking of my personal team preference, if you know me, you know I'm a root chakra kind of guy. By that I mean I like the ground and steel types. I like these big, hefty, usually kind of ugly motherfuckers. My absolute favorite ones are this, fossil Pokemon, this dinosaur, Bastiodon. It's basically just this dinosaur with a giant square head with these ugly ass horns. And it's, I don't know, you could call it cute if you're weird, or you could call it ugly if you're normal. And I love it. He, sort of like Shuckle, is a defensive monster. He just stands there and takes hits, and then you blow shit up with your whatever powers you want to put on him. I always put, what's it called? Like, Steel Ball or something, where you, the slower you are, the stronger it hits.
Yeah, Gyro Ball.
Gyro Ball. That's my go-to with this motherfucker. And so I really love him. I like that, like, sturdy, defensive, steel and ground type. I also like, just keeping with the steel and ground format, well, this one's steel and bug, but, you know, either or. Scizor. My fucking man. He's weak to fire, and that's about it, right?
Yeah, yeah. So this is like a humanoid praying mantis. Human-sized praying mantis.
But with, I don't know, crab claws?
Gigantic crunching pincers, yeah.
Basically, a terrifying monster. A 4-foot terrifying fucking monster that if I ever saw, I would run screaming. But I love him so much. And maybe this is just me continuing to hold to my childish edgelord, you know, tendencies, but most of my Pokemon team is like this grungy red and black and brown and dark yellows and color, like, it's not very colorful. And maybe that's, mm-hmm. that's just what these guys...
I would definitely call him for something something overcompensating something something, but like, really, you know, it's uncanny how even monsters in here that are explicitly made out of stone or metal or, like, fire, they're all still, like, pretty cuddleable. Like, looking at one of these things, you know, it takes the edgelord factor off a significant amount when it's with the specific intent of that. That is going to be my new friend. We're going to eat treats together, and I'm going to, like, polish him, and we'll also fight.
Hell yeah. Like, one of my favorite Pokemon to have on my team, anytime, every time, if possible, Torterra. This motherfucker is, well, let's say a tortoise, except he has an island on his back. And he's kind of ugly and kind of spiky and pointy, but he has this kind, ugly face where you just want to rub your face in him. And I love him.
Yeah, like, this is a Pokemon that's pretty much based off of the old myth of the turtle that carries the world on its back. It definitely doesn't carry a whole world, but it's got a, like a cool bonsai tree and some miniature mountains. Mm-hmm. And like, still it somehow gives off the radiation, like the energy of like a cool dad who's not in touch, but is like just like still seems really nice. Like most of the Pokemon look explicitly trustworthy, and they're just like buddies.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's how I feel about my team. Fucking love putting them together. Even if they're, you know, maybe a bit childish in their design, I love them.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Speaking of design, if you don't mind this transition.
No, please.
Like, how do you feel about, just in general, how some of these guys are? There's definitely the cute ones, the weird ones, and the cool ones. Like, I would that's how I would generalize the art distinctions between the Pokemon that exist. How would you say it?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's cute ones. What were your categories?
I was saying there's cute, weird, and cool.
Cute, weird, and cool. I mean, that pretty much grabs them. There are some pretty infamous Pokemon. Like, a lot of people, when Generation 5 rolled around, and there was the trash bag Pokemon, Trubbish, and the vanilla ice cream Pokemon, Vanillux, people were like, man, they're not trying anymore. I would argue at once that, yes, they're still trying, and no, they've never been trying. Like, you know, any image that's recognizable in any way, and plenty that aren't, other than, mysteriously, I don't think a dolphin has been a Pokemon yet, and that seems like pretty much like a layup.
Yeah, they haven't. They've had sharks, but...
But, yeah, and, like, just about any concept that anyone could have any kind of affinity for, there's a Pokemon for that.
There's a utility. I'm not... Utensil Pokemon? There's... I don't know. He can turn into a refrigerator.
There is a Pokemon that's an electric ghost, and the gimmick of which is that it can inhabit, like, a refrigerator or a lawnmower and stuff and gain powers appropriate to that. Again, you know, like, a lot of people are kind of salty about it. At this point, I'm never going to be able to shake it off. Whatever they make, it's just like, yeah, that's a Pokemon. Because the very first generation still had, this Pokemon is just a pile of toxic sludge. It evolves into a Pokemon that is a bigger pile of toxic sludge. Mm-hmm. This Pokemon is a rock with a face and some arms. Like, you know, the concepts are, you've just got to tone down your strictness a little bit, let them wash over you, and, you know, And the ones, you know, some are super ugly. Like, they're trying to be ugly. Animals are ugly. Like, they're making a definitely more colorful, but still pretty nature-like, you know, world. I wouldn't necessarily call it immersive, but, like, it's fun to let yourself be immersed.
Yeah. Just jumping right in. I'm going to say that the character designs, the Pokemon designs, at least, I'm going to give them a... good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Out of why not?
Yeah, 800 something out of keep 'em coming is my review.
Yeah, like some of them are dumb as fuck, and they've always been dumb as fuck, and I like to look at them. And some of the cute ones are adorable. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm still in my 10-year-old phase when I play Pokemon, but I avoid putting them on my team like the plague. Mm-hmm. And the weird ones, you know, the Trubbish, whatever the fuck his name is.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of entertaining in their, like, there's one that's a keychain. It's keys on a keychain.
Klefki!
It's fucking cool. It's funny. And then there's the cool ones, you know, fucking Charizard, a dragon dude. He's mm-hmm. not actually a dragon. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. Like, it's entertaining. It's cool and interesting.
Mm-hmm. With its tail as a torch that's on fire. I mean, Charizard's probably the most, other than, obviously, Pikachu, the big face, who we've somehow, you know, gone past mentioning right up till now. We're probably really sticking to the games.
Yeah. You know, let's get into fucking Pikachu real quick. Pikachu, I'm going to give you a fucking sucks out of dick.
Oh, really? Okay.
He's not that cute.
We're trotting out the Pikachu ire.
I don't like Pikachu. His younger form is cuter. His older form is stronger. Pikachu's worthless.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the point why he's the fucking face of the show. Make, I don't know, Dialga the face. No, that's a bad choice. Make,
Jigglypuff was the, Clefairy, rather, was the original plan. Yeah. In the manga they trotted out, Clefairy, they wanted to be, like, the number one. Like, hey, here's our cute guy, you know, here's the one who's gonna be, you know, we're gonna make the most merchandise of, and so forth. But, you know, I mean, in something with, even right out the gate, 151 creatures, it makes sense they would want one to be the kind of marketable thing. Yeah, I'm kind of weary of Pikachu. you know, Pikachu's in Smash Brothers, like anything involving Pokemon, like Pikachu's gonna be the face of it. There's the Detective Pikachu games that are out now. I don't really know a doggone thing about those, and we're not gonna cover them on this podcast, maybe sometime down the line. But,
That would involve playing it.
I enjoyed Pikachu back in Gen 1, when it was super fat. Like, the in-game art for Pikachu was so freaking chubby, like, it was almost spherical. And in the first games, they didn't really make a big fuss about it. And I think just the more and more, like, it was just kind of a rare thing to run into early on in the game. And, you know, if you caught it, you would have an electric-type Pokemon earlier than you normally could. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was pretty much it. But, you know, the more and more they kind of shove it into people's faces, the more I and, you know, Ollie here get kind of weary about it.
Yeah. Plus, with its popularity, its evolved form, its supposedly stronger version,
mm-hmm.
it's just kind of set to the side. It's like, yeah, I don't know, where's the Raichu? Raichu mm-hmm. love. Not Raichu.
Raichu gets left in the dirt.
Yeah. He's a bigger, cooler version of Pikachu.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's time to bring him
back.
He's
got a longer tail. He's shockier.
Yeah. Speaking of the Pokemon, how do you feel about the legendaries, or whatever they're canonically called?
I think at this point they are canonically called legendaries. Now, these are ones starting from the second generation and onward. They are on the cover of the boxes. In the first generation, it was just the starter Pokemon, the ones you would have the very first opportunity to pick. Do I want the grass, the water, or the fire? Those were on the cover of the boxes. Now it's these, you know, not necessarily deified in the games, but definitely deified by... Yeah, some of them are. Just unique Pokemon. There's only one of them in each copy of a game. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can trade with other games to get six Lugias if you really want to, but that are... And there's always a special circumstance to getting to them. In the very early games, and this is the treatment of it I like best, kind of the theme that's cropping up, is they were just super rare. You would go into optional environments, fight your way to the end, and there was a Pokemon, and you just had your one shot. If please remember to save before trying it. But, you know, if you knocked it out, that was it. But you've got an opportunity to try to catch this Pokemon, or just beat it if you love chaos. And it would be an more powerful than usual and, you know, interesting, rare thing to put on your team. In the later games, they've been becoming more and more plot relevant.
And more deified as we continue.
More and more plot relevant, more and more deified. In Generation 3, depending on which version of the game you picked, either Groudon, this kind of Godzilla-like, specifically associated with the Earth creature.
Looks sort of like Godzilla and a lobster-tailed monster, baby.
Yeah, bright red, incredibly sharp, very big, serpentine, lizard-like kind of thing. If that was woken up by Team Magma, the bad guys in that game, and would cause a super hot sunshine. It intensified the sun and would cause a drought. So essentially, you either catching or defeating Groudon would prevent that from causing chaos to the world.
Yeah.
And a Pokemon having a power that's that big just kind of, A, makes it seem like sort of a bummer when you catch it and add it to your team and find that it's not, you know, it's powerful in a fight, but it's not powerful enough to, like, destabilize the Earth. Like, you know, they once they ascribe it more significance in the plot than it has when you can actually use it. Like, I'm definitely not saying that a Pokemon should ever be uncatchable. That would suck. Like, that's the whole point, is they're within your reach. But, you know, just this, the more and more they get turned into kind of the antagonist rather than just a neat reward for exploring and going out of your way, the less I'm into it.
Yeah. And, that sort of, brings up, like, the very first legendary, if you will, Mewtwo.
Mewtwo.
He wasn't story relevant at all. He was just a motherfucker that after you beat the game, you could go back to one of the starting cities, walk into a cave, and get your ass beat.
Yeah, this is the ultimate bonus challenge, and that's how I feel like they should be handled. And Mewtwo was, like, particular had hints of a plot that got expanded on in, like, the really terrible movies, but...
Terrible, my dick!
The
it was
really
beautiful.
God-awful garbage movies.
It was a masterpiece, we should all watch it.
Sucko Out of Bullshit is my preemptive rating for the movies, and I will stick to that when we get to those episodes, but Mewtwo... was a Pokemon created by science that was like this abomination of people going too far and trying to clone the ultimate fighting thing. And you would hear about Mewtwo, but only in very oblique, like, just subtle hints on your way through the game. You would have to go through the haunted laboratory, not explicitly haunted, but the burnt out laboratory where they're created Mewtwo. You know, so you got to see the aftermath, and when you actually get to it, it's kind of understated, it's just a Pokemon now. Whereas in the other games, the destructive ability of the legendary Pokemon is so in your face, and it's like, they're becoming the star and not me. Like, I want my antagonist to be like cool criminal Giovanni and not this screaming, and frankly uglier and uglier as time goes on, you know, dragon thing.
Yeah. I'm gonna be honest, like, I feel like your judgment of this particular aspect, the legendaries, goes from pretty awesome to kind of lame as the generations progressed. And I'm going to disagree with you in my personal judgment of
sure.
it, in that I am going to keep it I'm going to give it a consistent, I kind of dig it. I'm feeling it. Because, yeah, as you go on, they get bigger and a little more ridiculous and a little weirder. Like, starting with Lugia and Ho-Oh, it's just like, you're the guardian of the sky and the guardian of the ocean. And that's thematically, like, in the game with the text dialogues, it very much seems like here's a tribe of people on this island who sees this big monster who keeps their island safe, maybe? They don't know.
Yeah.
And that seems cool.
It's pretty explicitly, like, they are known in myth and legend by, you know, like, ancient people as these great things without actually, like, they're just exceptionally strong animals.
Yeah. But I do kind of enjoy the fact that they get, maybe not up to Arceus or whatever the, how do you say the name?
Arceus. Arceus. I don't know.
I don't know either. Arceus. Like, I'm not getting to him yet, but he's the top of the list, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
From Lugia, you get to, like, Groudon and Kyogre.
Yeah.
It's just like, I like the fact that they are, you know, these monstrously large things that's like, I can cause a drought and make the land masses expand because of how little water there is, or I can flood the whole earth. Is that a little excessive? Yes. Does that actually pan out in the I summon you to fight way? Not really. But I don't know. I kind of like it. And, I mean, it keeps going up and up. There's, at one point, some Pokemon that are in charge of time and space. And that's a little fucking weird.
Yeah. The degree to which that, in the fourth generation, the degree to which those Pokemon appear to be able to actually, like, alter the universe is beyond the scope of anything I'm really interested in seeing in these games. Like, like, it was just supposed to be a bunch of friends, and, like, you go to gyms, and it, like, pulls away from being able to care about, oh, I want to be the league champion, if there really is a Pokemon that can, like, demake the universe. That's too much.
Yeah, I feel that, and I definitely get, like, that is too much, but I do enjoy the idea of, like, here's this, maybe not deity, but this concept given physical form, this idea of perpetual sunlight, this continent-forming creature. Here's this, like, physicalized concept of time and space that you can control and put, just shove it into this tiny ball, and now it's yours. You own it.
I continue to maintain these are theorized in mythology to control time and space, and debatably true in the actual execution.
Potato, tomato. It makes you feel cool, and I'm into it. And that leads up to Arceus, which I think maybe canonically, or maybe canonically in the mythos of whatever people existed, is considered God.
Yeah, and it's definitely, like, this is a Pokemon that is dressed up in all kinds of creator god myths.
Yeah.
With specifically, like, its shape, I was looking this up earlier, is There's various Shinto things, various Buddhist things, until we get to our episode on Shinto.
I don't really...
That doesn't count. That's not nerd culture. That's culture.
That's real culture. That's cool stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyways, like, he's supposed to be God. Mm-hmm. And whether that's... he's actually God, I don't fucking care. Mm-hmm. It's probably not true. What I like, though, is that he's the strongest Pokemon. Like,
pretty much.
Stat-based, he has a higher stat total than anyone. Except...
Rayquaza will give him a run for his money.
I think he's still higher, like, number per number base level.
I don't know off the top.
I'm like 95% mm-hmm. sure. But what I do know for sure is that Mewtwo, not God, man-made, if you Mega Evolve, which is a thing we didn't talk about at all because whatever, it just makes him bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically Pokemon trying to be a little bit more Digimon.
There's an enhanced state to Mewtwo, a super mode that it can do.
Yes. And when it Mega Evolves, it becomes stronger than Arceus, stat-wise.
Yeah, point for point.
And
whether or not it actually goes that way in a fight, you know, that depends a lot on a lot of factors.
That depends on what you do and, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. But just stat point by point,
mm-hmm.
I think it's cool. It's just like, here's a man-made Pokemon. It's not mm-hmm. as strong as God unless he tries real hard or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then now he's stronger than God. Yeah. And something about that little, mm-hmm. I don't know, thematic twist of the nipple really gets me going.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like it's gotten a little bloated over the years. You know, like, it feels like the world itself is trying to convince me, like, hey, who gives a shit about your Pidgeot that you spent a long time, you know, trying to make it strong when these things are out here and exist? I'm gonna give it a, tone it down, guys, out of wish it was optional.
Yep. Honestly, I think this is the first time we've really disagreed on this, particular segment. You were kind of cold on it. I'm kind of warm on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there anything else you'd like to talk about? I mean, that's pretty much most of the bullet points I have. All that's really left on my list of things I would like to say. The fact that, I don't know, the world,
mm-hmm.
the fact that it's all centered around dog fighting is kind of weird.
It's like dog playing. Like, you're, like, literally coded into the game, your Pokemon's friendship value goes up every time you send it into battle and it beats somebody else. Like, it's not like dogfighting. Like, they're on the verge of insanity. Like, they're kept in terrible conditions and, you know, so they constantly stay aggressive. Like, these guys are gonna fight anyway. Like, if you walk into some grass, you are attacked. Like, you, in the very first game, it's like, no. The rats and birds that live out in the world are too dangerous for you, like a more or less pubescent young man, to go out there without the protection of your own animal. Like, the minimum of these creatures is enough to kill you. So the morality of the dog fighting and stuff in this is like, that's nature. Like, it's built in. That's kind of how things were supposed to be. There are, you know, like, PETA has anti-Pokemon shit, but who the hell cares what PETA does? Like,
they're also just bad.
Their fucking rap sheet is longer than we're going to be able to get into here, but don't donate your money to PETA, kids. Donate to us and our podcast, and we will, in a very roundabout way, make the world better. Or if you want to go more directly, donate to your local animal shelter, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. Or adopt a dog, and they're beautiful.
Yeah, people. Yeah. Adopt a dog, adopt a cat, whatever.
You know, I own a cat.
Mm-hmm.
Mabel's my baby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a dog person, though. And I think she feels it sometimes when she bites me. I think she knows.
Yeah, maybe so. We have a cat, and her only love is to fight. Like, that convinces me. Like, hey, Pokemon, more real than you might think. Like, you know, essentially, like, playing tug the rope in real life with your puppy is about equivalent to telling your flaming lizard to use Fire Blast on the opponent's, you know, gigantic bee. And, you know, it's, like, it's all for kicks. The fact that you get money from it in the game is a little weird. I understand that they wanted there to be money as a game mechanic to buy potions and all of that, but, you know, that puts a little spin on it, but I don't know. I'm putting my foot down wholesome out of sweet.
Alright. I'm gonna go with interested in something coming out of it. Like I'm not cold on it. I think I'm fine with, like, the mm-hmm. idea of it. Is it inherently sound kind of wrong? A little bit. Mm-hmm. just give me a twinge of it. But, like, I get it in a world that where that's the basis of existence. Like,
mm-hmm.
you need these guys to survive. I get it. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And, like, they've got it, get into it in, like, X and Y.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they mentioned that there was a war that was fought at some time with Pokemon.
Yeah, an ancient war, and like they were like, no, this time they really died.
Yeah, like that's interesting. I'm not sure if I'd want to play that game, but maybe.
I mean, even in Generation 1, Lieutenant Surge says, oh yeah, I fought in the war. These are my Pokemon buddies. They fought with me in the war. And I'm like, dude, what war? Like, he's explicitly an American. Like, he said, they're like, Lieutenant Surge, the Lightning American, which makes me think the names of the nations are the same geographically, even if the individual, like, districts are different. But presumably the war can't have gone that bad for him because he stuck around in Japan afterward and became, like, this public figure.
Or maybe he, like, just left.
Yeah, maybe he defected.
Yeah.
I turned traitor during the war. I sold out my red, white, and blue comrades.
Me too.
Me and my Electrode.
So that's pretty much everything I have. Let's wrap up by saying what we think the best direction for the future is. What do you think they should stop doing, and what do you think they should do to make it better, to make it newer, fresher, fucking whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In future Pokemon, if only, not necessarily because I think the quality of the designs are slipping, there's definitely a nostalgic quality and a simplicity to the older ones that makes me have a little more affection for them. But every time a Pokemon game comes out, I like some of the new ones. That said, I kind of hope they cool it on making new Pokemon, and I'd be totally interested in just a Pokemon game that puts you in it, like, the environment is very different. Like, rather than just, let's walk from town to town, like flip the narrative formula, and then, you know, you can put current Pokemon in new situations and have the new context make things a lot more interesting. There are some spin-off games that play like typical Pokemon games. They're not like Pokemon kart racing or anything, with a very different formula, but those came out on the GameCube, which means nobody has ever played them or ever will. Pokemon Colosseum and the like, and I like those quite a bit. Like we were talking about before, I just kind of want to see new story stuff. Like, yeah. You don't have to have gyms. Like, I like the Team of Six, turn-based fighting, like I'm into that, and, you know, if they want to put a spin on it, if they want to make it a little tougher, I wouldn't mind it. Like, literally, maybe I'm 8 years old versus I'm a veteran setting at the start of a game would be neat. Like, I would love if there was just a hard mode to keep me a little more engaged, because eventually it just kind of gets to tap-a-tap-a-tap-a when I already know what I'm doing.
Yeah, like a button to basically activate, like, competitive bot AI rather than just... I'm gonna attack you now.
Just make the AI a little smarter. Make the opponents a little more diverse. That would be neat. But still, you know, have a kid-friendly setting. You know, make it so you can put the safety on. Because ultimately, like, you know, I am against the co-opting by adults of things that are meant to be for kids. This is meant to be for everybody. But,
it's E for everyone.
It is absolutely, it is E for everyone. It's about as E for everyone as it gets.
So yeah, I think... I obviously agree with you in the plot standpoint. We gotta freshen that up somewhere. I mentioned earlier, like, I would not be against a game where you are Team Rocket. I'm not sure how you would, E for everyone that. I mean, you could do it. It's still in the core game.
You just take Pokemon and do some crimes.
Yeah. It's just like, I'm the bad guy would be kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, maybe I've had this dumb idea of just like, instead of it being about the gyms or whatever, it's just, like, maybe make the focus the, like, they've done it a couple times, like, sort of. Like, here's this big bad Pokemon, it's gonna ruin the world. But, like, make that be a real threat! Like, make it be about you, this, I don't know, the animal control expert who has this ultimate team. And you're like, alright, I'm gonna go fight the biggest thing here that's causing all this ruckus. Mm-hmm. And have that be, like, an actual thing that's, like, difficult to do and... is something you're trying to actually save the world. And at the end of it, it's like, thank you, person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Rather than just, I'm going to collect stuff.
Yeah. And I'm like, I can get into big, dangerous enemy. I definitely...
If it feels real.
I definitely wish, like, less with the cosmic takes, more with just, this is a dangerous creature. Play to the beast side of things. Mm-hmm. Like, it kind of starts taking me out of it once we get to the space-time alternate dimensions. Like, I'm looking for more of a Defenders than an Avengers, let's say.
fair enough. Alright, so yeah.
That's Pokemon, I think.
Pretty much.
We've talked about everything ever to do with Pokemon. We covered it all. I can't believe it.
Yep, no one's gonna say otherwise. So, I mean, let's just do a quick wrap-up.
Mm-hmm.
In gist, we like the games, but as far as Judgment goes, they're fidgety, they're polished to an unnecessary degree, they're not that special.
Yeah. If you've played none, play one. But exactly. Don't go buy them all. Like, you'll know if it's got its hooks in you, whether you need that. But, you know, you can enjoy a Pokemon experience without being a collector in the game or of the games.
Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, I'm gonna buy the next one, despite my 42-year ass, like, self not needing to because I've already played it. I'm still gonna do it because it's a fun experience to have.
Yeah.
And I guess that's enough.
It's just hanging out. It's not going to change your life unless you're, you know, 8. in which case, it almost certainly will.
Oh, it's the reason I learned to read.
There's absolutely.
So much
I absolutely learned how to read because Pokemon made it interesting to read all of that. And it wasn't even a lot back in the day.
I mean, not really. But here's the thing. All right. My Cuban ass was like, I understood English. I could speak it. I could communicate. Mm-hmm. I could read it a little bit. But I wasn't on that level. I was a little behind my peers in the reading sense. Mm-hmm. But then I got Pokemon and was like, I can't spend an hour reading this one panel. I'm going to do this quick.
Let's tidy it up. Yeah.
And like, I learned to read through Pokemon, which is a wild thing to say because it's not like teach your kid how to read video game. It's just I learned to read because I needed that skill in order to make this game more entertaining.
Yes. It's wholesome. Absolutely can be educational. I definitely attribute some of my ability to have logic, like ifs and thens, to Pokemon. Like, you know, water beats fire. That's pretty straightforward. Keeping track of, like, okay, so ghost beats psychic? Sure, I guess. Like, you know, I'm not saying that the actual physics in Pokemon are accurate to life. You know, just being able to then apply, like, the learning of information like that to other things. Like, I definitely think it's made me sharper. So, hey, if you've got a kid, give him Pokemon. It's yeah. not Satan like they, you know, try to say it is sometimes.
Maybe you don't want it, but they're gonna love it.
Yeah. It, you know, nothing's, like, it's about camaraderie, being nice to animals, like, even though having them fight each other, but it's just for fun, so we're just playing around. You know, there really is, like, in the text, nothing that's gonna, like, you know, corrupt a child.
Exactly. So yeah.
Now,
that's...
like, letting them Google Pokemon, you might want to, like, still look over their shoulder for that, because there's definitely some furries out there.
Yeah, keep the safe search on.
Keep the safe search on.
Unless you're into it.
All right, so there's our sign-off. Keep the safe search on.
So, yeah, like we mentioned before, find us on Delta Cryptid Productions on Twitter.
Yes.
We're going to be setting up ourselves a Patreon and whatever other things we need. Find us on...
We're figuring it all out. Yeah. This is the pilot. This is probably one of, like, three pilots that might all come out at the same time once we actually know what we're doing with this podcast. But, yep. Hey, thanks for joining us.
Yeah. And tune in next week. We'll mm-hmm. probably put these out once a week.
Something like that.
Yep. And I think the next one is going to be a movie. How would you feel about The Avengers? It's a big title. Some people will like it.
Yeah, fucking sure. All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
We'll watch that.
So
see how that holds up.
Find us on those places we said.
Yes. And that covers it all.
All right.
Okay. Done.
Goodbye.
End. Stop.